And this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A week ago today, the nation was shocked by another sudden act of school violence. This time it was a high school in Murraysville, Pennsylvania, and this time the weapon was not a gun, but a knife. According to reports, last Wednesday, a 16-year-old boy started randomly slashing and stabbing fellow students in a crowded hallway while they were changing classes. No one died in the attack, although four students are in critical condition. The incident stunned the community, especially because the teen in question had exhibited no anger, no struggles, no evidence of being bullied, no hints that he might lash out. Now, as students there return to classes today and the town sorts through this attack, school districts around the country, including in New Hampshire, are taking note of what happened and how they might learn from it. Today in The Exchange, revisiting school security. Let's hear from you. Has your local district tried to improve its security procedures in recent years? If so, how? And what do you think is the right way to approach this, especially when each incident can be so different? Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you'd like. We had three guests with us in studio. Kevin Hamilton is here. He's a retired New Hampshire state captain and member of the Campton School Board's Safety Committee. And Kevin Hamilton, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Deborah Livingston, superintendent of the Manchester School District, former superintendent of Fall Mountain Regional District, which includes Walpole, where a student shot himself at school in 2012. And Deborah Livingston, it's good to meet you, too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us, Ellen Cohn, psychology professor and coordinator of the Justice Studies program at UNH. She's been looking a lot at this issue of school security. And Ellen, really good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and I want to start with you, Ellen, but ask everybody, as professionals whose job it is to keep students at school safe, what went through your mind last week, Ellen, when you first heard about this attack in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think the first thing was I was surprised that of the weapon that was used, a knife instead of a gun. Because in studies that have been done of school shootings, what they have found is that nearly always guns have been used. And so that surprised me. I think it's unclear yet whether there's information in the press, but we don't know really what motivated the student to do it. So, of course, I thought, why did the student decide to do it? He was described as a B-plus student who came from a family without any kind of problems. And so that was the first thing.
He didn't fit that sort of loner, angry, bullied profile. And we'll talk a little bit later about your work, Ellen, saying that profiling doesn't really work anyway. So, but to you too, Deborah, you know, you're a superintendent at a big school district, Manchester. What went through your mind?
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to the school, the district, the children, the families. A great deal of sadness. I know the fear and how scary things like this can be and how life-changing an event like this can be to everyone in the community.
Yeah, and the kids just went back today. It's
yes.
been a week. And as I said in my introduction, you've got a little personal experience with this, that
yes.
incident in Walpole 2 years ago.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what went through your mind in terms of relating that 2012 experience to what we saw in Pennsylvania
well,
last week.
Well, certainly my mind goes straight to the situation that occurred in Walpole. A young man, and I'm going to share with you, because of privacy, of course, things that were already shared in the media. But a young man came into a cafeteria and shot himself in front of about 70 children as well as staff members. So really going back to that moment, thinking about, of course, the safety of children from that point going forward, what we were going to do for them, their families, and get them back into school and have them feel safe in their school again.
Yeah, and Kevin, to you, you've got sort of a dual perspective on this, a former
sure.
captain with the state troopers, but also now a member of the Campton School Board. What went through your head last week?
Well, the knife was certainly a new twist. I agree with the doctor that it usually is a handgun or some type of a firearm. You know, on the security side of it, what I think about is, you know, what did the school have for a plan? Was there a fair in that plan? Did the you know, was there something that could be critiqued that could maybe not make that happen in the future? So my angle was more of the security part of it. But I agree with the superintendent also. I mean, these are life-changing. These the community, the parents, the students, the educators, the adults in the building, they're going to have this for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about a plan, I have heard from friends who work in different schools here in New Hampshire, Kevin, and maybe you can jump in on this, that everybody's got their lockdown drills and everybody's got their plans and procedures. But she was in a situation recently where there was a lockdown situation called for, but it was in one of those middle times. You know, it was not during class time where everybody knows what to do. It was kind of, I can't remember if it was during lunch or recess or something, sure. But it was a little trickier.
Sure. Well, we call those when you transition. That's where you're moving, you know, from point A to point B.
Right.
When you transition students, you know, that's that is you have to consider that in your safety plan.
Yeah. All right. Well, the phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, today in the Exchange, we're looking at school security once again in light of what happened last week in Pennsylvania. Let's hear from you. Your comments, questions, and thoughts on this topic are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And before we dive into what Kevin so appropriately calls the plan, Ellen, I did want to just get a reality check from you. It's easy to hear about this and think that our schools are becoming more and more dangerous. How accurate is that?
It's not accurate at all, because, in fact, if you look at the number of homicides and murders of children, they're much more likely to not happen in schools. Your listeners can't see this, but this shows you over time the number of suicides and murders, and you can see it's much less than it happens in schools, much more likely to happen outside of schools.
Yeah, your colleagues at UNH have looked at this, mm-hmm. that students, kids are actually much safer
right.
in school than anywhere else.
Yes.
And why is that?
I think that school is a more protected environment, and I think it's a chilling to hear about the incident that just happened. I think all of us were struck by Newtown, what happened.
Absolutely. But
if you look at the probability of that happening to your child is safe going to school. I think other people on the panel will agree with me. And so I think the likelihood of it happening, it's a rare event. But when it happens, it obviously gets a lot of attention, because when parents send their children to school, they expect they're going to be safe. They don't think an incident like this is going to happen. Even if it happens in Pennsylvania and we live in New Hampshire, it still has that same effect on parents.
Or Connecticut or Walpole. I mean,
exactly.
Again, when that boy shot himself, you know, you didn't know, Deborah, that he wasn't going to turn on other kids in the school.
Right. But again, to the point of safety.
Perspective, yeah.
Yes. I think schools have become safer than ever. And the reason they have is because safety is an every day, every hour, every moment, every one situation. We're constantly doing drills, making sure, and that brings a sense of comfort to children when they know that if something happens, they know exactly what they are supposed to do, and they know that the adults around them have been trained to know exactly what to do and to keep them safe. So the culture, in some ways, in schools has changed, and the climate as well, but again, everyone is so concentrated on that, helping children feel safe, that it has continued and will continue to get better and better.
And it's interesting. I'm too young to remember duck and cover, but too old to be part of this generation lockdown. So for me, the idea of a lockdown drill is, oh my goodness, you know, it's kind of scary. But I asked my 10-year-old, Kevin, they had one a couple weeks ago, and I said, wow, how did that make you feel? And he said, oh, it made me feel safe.
Sure. In fact, at our district meeting a couple of weeks ago, we had a parent, I do a state of school security at our district meeting, and a parent said her young child came home after one of our drills and said that child felt comfortable. What made me kind of happy is that at least there was that dialogue between child and parent, and it shows that it works. And to the superintendent's point, The drills, practice, and practice. You have to do it. It's almost like a thing in law enforcement we call muscle memory. So if you can get the adults in the building to do it the right way, and let's, you know, we talk about lockdown. There's more to it than that. There's more drills that you have to conduct other than a lockdown. That's the big one. That's the big kahuna. Someone's in the building that want to do harm. But, you know, some other things of, you know, we have a thing called a reverse evacuation. That's when kids are out in the playground, or it's not uncommon to have a bear or a moose or a hunter, you know, wander close to them. So you get them in an organized fashion back into the building. So lockdown is very important, obviously, but there's got to be other practice drills.
All right. Well, let's go to our listeners. Lots of people want to jump in on our conversation. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's go first to Goffstown, where Alan's waiting. Hi, Alan. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my question really revolves around, we live in a state where weapons are so readily available to everyone. How do you really, you know, plan to protect children in schools when weapons are that available?
Thanks for the call, Alan. And maybe to you, Deborah, what do you think? I mean, it's an issue. Weapons are out there. So how do you, as a superintendent, begin to protect against that?
Well, again, we're a learning organization. All school districts are. And it's about education. It's about educating our children to recognize if there's a weapon that they need to go to an adult immediately, or if they hear a rumor or they think that something may be up, that they know what to do. They're our biggest, really our biggest safety watchers. They make sure, they are a part of making sure that our schools are safe.
Yeah, go ahead, Ellen.
Related to that point, there's a program at UNH called Bring On the Bystander. And there's actually been some work on bullying done at Somersworth High School, training teachers and training students how to intervene if they hear about something. Because one thing we know about school violence is that other people know. It's not an impulsive act. They tell other people. And so your point is well taken.
All right. We'll talk a lot more about that after a short break. Thank you for that call, Alan. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. More conversation about school security in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. More on the ongoing conversation about school security on The Exchange, 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the political motivations of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Bow, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua. TheMerrimack.com. From Dos Amigos Burritos, fresh Mexican eat-in or takeout, hearty, healthy, happy in Portsmouth, Dover, Rochester, Concord, and Manchester. Online menu at DosAmigosBurritos.com. And the New Hampshire Moose License Plate Program, thanking drivers for supporting the Granite State's natural, historical, and cultural heritage. Information online at mooseplate.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at school security, and we want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. How has your local district tried to improve its security procedures in recent years, given the incidents that we've seen, including the most recent one just last week in Pennsylvania? What has your district done? What do you think is the right way to approach this, especially when each attack can be so different, as we've unfortunately seen? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Ellen Cohn, psychology professor, coordinator of the Justice Studies Program at UNH, Kevin Hamilton, retired New Hampshire state captain and member of the Campton School Board's Safety Committee, and Deborah Livingston. She's superintendent of the Manchester School District, former superintendent of the Fall Mountain Regional District. One more time, that exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. So just before the break, we were starting to get get into the idea that one of the biggest ways to improve school security, and I think I'll turn to you first, Kevin, is that there's often a hint, there's often a sign. A kid might drop a hint to a friend or someone else. Give us a little bit more on that.
Sure. I guess the way you look at it is that the Secret Service did a great study back in 2002, 2004. I think there's a couple of volumes. I do have those, and I have read them. Very detailed. And what they say is that a student that does this is not the invisible student. There is some kind of thing going on with that student, some type of at-risk behavior or something like that. And you know, you just train the adults in the building to keep an eye on that thing.
And give us an example of what you're talking about.
Well, an at-risk behavior would be maybe, acting out inappropriately, aggressive, those type of things.
Yeah, of course. There's lots of kids, especially teenagers, who act out and are aggressive and so forth.
Well, sure. And I don't think it's an exact science. I think the other panel guests will tell you that. It's not exactly, you can't say this is going to happen, this student is going to do this. It's some of the stuff is non-predictable.
Yeah, and you keep an eye on it, though. Right. And I want to hear from you, too, as well. Although I will say, Ellen, at least in this Pennsylvania case, people said, this boy seemed fine, 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 fine.
Well, there was a hint. I don't know if it's accurate or not, that he might have been bullied. That was one thing that came up in the press. Another thing was that perhaps he had threatened two students the night before. That was in the press yesterday. Again, I don't know whether that's accurate or not accurate.
But we're still learning about this.
Yes.
But you're saying maybe there were those little
perhaps
hints. How do you avoid going overboard on this? I'd love to hear from everybody, but I'll start with you, Ellen. You know, again, kids have difficult emotional lives, and especially teens, they're going up and down, and, you know, kids say stuff all the time.
But I think that there's a difference between saying things. I think sometimes, again, as I said before, the bystanders, their friends can tell the difference when they say something. And so I think the suggestion of making sure that they know that it's safe to report that to adults when you hear those things can make a difference. And I think sometimes teachers know that. If we use the example of Virginia Tech, the person who was involved in that case actually wrote very threatening kinds of things in writing in an English class. And the instructor of the English class actually told him to leave the class. But unfortunately, it wasn't followed up. She was a bystander. She knew that there was something wrong with this student, but she let it pass instead of going to maybe the counseling center or other places that might have helped.
I love your thoughts, Deborah Livingston, as well. And then I have a bunch of emails that have come in. Go ahead.
The unfortunate thing about trying to predict is that oftentimes what we've found is that many people in the school have tiny pieces. And unless those pieces are brought together as a whole, really aren't looking at the whole child. So I think the most important thing is the child teams, the student teams that consist of, could be an SRO officer, principal, counselor, teacher, that gathers around a table and discusses the pieces of particular students to see what interventions can be done for that student. And it makes sense then as to what, in particular, the focus will be for that child.
Yeah, and even if a child is not violent, it's still helpful for that particular
Absolutely.
Child to have that support.
Absolutely.
Okay, a couple emails have come in on the same point. So I'm going to read both of these because both of these gentlemen are making the same point, and it's a good one. Martin says, I'm having a difficult time with the panelists citing statistics on the likelihood of a child being harmed at school. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, how many school shootings took place? It seems like Columbine represents a change. How do pre-post-Columbine stats look? And then on a similar vein with Martin, here's Scott in Concord. He says, the point isn't that kids are safer in school than elsewhere in society. It's that kids aren't as safe in school as they were previously. He says, Laura, don't let Ellen off so easy on this point. Thank you, Scott, for that. And, you know, he's right. We can sit here and say kids are safe in school, but he's right, Ellen. When I was in school, there was nothing, nothing, nothing like this ever happened.
I would disagree that I think there were things happening. They didn't get the kind of publicity.
Really?
There were. We can trace things back. There's really good article that talks about that. And if you look at the trends of homicides in schools before Columbine, there actually were quite a few. But I think Columbine kind of brought it to the national attention. One explanation might be we didn't have a 24-hour news cycle before Columbine, so news was reported in a different way. But in fact, there were lots of incidents that happened. We think that most of them involve only boys. There was actually one incident that involved a girl many years ago who threatened a school. So
you're saying this did happen pre-Columbine?
Yes.
But not to the extent that it does now, or
no? No, I don't think so. I think if you look at the data going back to 1992, there were more incidents of homicides at school. After Columbine, it actually went up a little bit, but it's not the extent. I think it's a lot of it is coverage by the media.
What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think that it is coverage by the media. When an incident occurs, it doesn't just happen once for people who are watching. It is replayed and replayed and replayed. And, of course, that's a difficult thing to deal with.
Kevin, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, it's the news cycle is 24/7. I mean, you can turn on any major cable and see it live video.
But there is a feeling among people who grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s that school was a lot safer back then. You didn't hear about this stuff.
Well, back in my day, a New Hampshire kid grew up in Merrimack. It was a fist fight in back of the school and a bloody nose and a split lip maybe, and you shook hands and went home and that was it. To the extent that you practiced fire drills, that was it. I think the New Hampshire General Court jumped on this. They passed a law in 2007, the Emergency Response Plan law. They jumped on it, and obviously there was a recognition that things have probably increased or brought to the public eye that, that we need to pass the law and get these things done.
So you feel like our emailer does, both our emailers, that things have gotten worse?
I don't know if they've gotten worse. I agree with both the guests here that it's been reported more. One example I would, maybe just go off a little bit on child abuse. It's reported more now, but I think child abuse has been around for a long time, but it's more reported now than my analogy would be to child abuse and what Scott's talking about.
All right. Well, thanks for both of those emails. And we will try and put some of those statistics up on our website so people can take a look at them, because it is an important point that they raise and that you raise, Ellen. So thanks for both of those. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, we'll try to get some of those numbers up on the website for you. 1-800-892-6477. I want to ask all of you about a very thoughtful quote that jumped out for me just a couple days after this incident in Pennsylvania. Someone named Kenneth Trump, president of National School Safety and Security Services, who said, "More than metal detectors, we need mental detectors." In other words, as you all have said, adults need to be more in tune with the mental state of kids. I just thought that was very neatly put, Deborah. We need more than metal detectors. We need mental detectors.
I couldn't agree more with that comment. Certainly, after this situation in Walpole, one of the first things that parents brought to us is, can we have metal detectors? And I think that's a very common response. What are we going to do so this never happens again? At the same time, when you think about what kind of climate that would bring to a school and whether it would really prevent someone from bringing a weapon into school, I really think that metal detectors are not the way to go. We often hear adults talking about what security is like at an airport and how stressful that is. And I can't imagine a child coming into school every day and going through that stress, waiting in line to get into school and then begin the work of the day.
So do you have metal detectors in the Manchester district
no,
at any
we do
of your
not.
Schools?
No.
Okay. So, and I hear you. I mean, it's kind of this atmosphere and nobody's sure if they want to go there. On the other hand, Deborah, if somebody brings a gun to a school, people are going to say, why didn't you find it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it depends on, we're assuming that the gun comes in only through the front door and through a metal detector. But as we know, that is not always the case.
What do you mean by that?
That in looking back through incidents, we know that sometimes students can bring us that weapon in on off hours or come in a different way.
I see.
So that a metal detector is just going to protect that one doorway.
All right. Well, again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Michelle's calling in from Dover. Thanks for waiting, Michelle. You're in the exchange. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is related to the mental detectors, and I recently heard about, we've had first aid classes for a long time, and I recently heard about mental health first aid or behavioral health first aid, and it seems to me like that's something that we should all be taking, especially if we're around, well, really probably lots of different jobs that people might have, and I wondered if your panel could comment on that.
Okay. Michelle, thanks a lot. What do you think? I'm sure you've got some thoughts there, Ellen.
I think you're right that we pay more attention to people's physical health than we do to their mental health. And I think for both children and adults, it would be a good thing to spend as much time, have a yearly checkup, which might be a mental health checkup, as we do for physical health.
Although there'd be some privacy concerns there. And why are you asking my kid about, you know, what's happening at home? And maybe mm-hmm. I don't want you to know what's happening at home.
Right. I think that often that's the issue, that if when we look into some of these school shooters, even though we can't profile them, one of the things we find out is that they're showing signs that they needed help. The New York Times did a study on mass murderers in general who do mass murder, which this is obviously one of them. And one of the things that was found is that they showed mental health problems, but they fell behind the cracks. One of the problems is we build up these silos where we don't share information, as raised by Superintendent Livingston. And so I think the mental health piece is really critical.
Kevin, what do you think about this idea of sort of infrastructure versus attention to mental health that Ellen mentions and our caller mentions? Again, more than metal detectors, we need mental detectors.
Sure. I mean, the caller has a very valid point. Mental health is a huge issue now. But I think what's really important about that is the other panel members have been talking about is, you know, maybe a warning sign, not the invisible student. When you get that information, where do you go with it? What do you do with it? And I think a school has to have that culture and climate that, hey, there's an issue here. And have that open door policy where you can go in there and you can see, you know, this just doesn't seem right. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to solve this? Where do you go with it?
That frontline student who
absolutely
may have a hint.
Right.
Here's the thing, and you know kids, how do you make them feel comfortable sharing that information? I mean, you know, if I share that information with you, you're my school resource officer, what if it gets back to the kid in question and, you know, he beats me up?
Well, you know, that all has to do with the culture and climate of the school. That has to be prevented. If you read the state law, I think on the pupil safety law, I think one of the first sentences there that the school has to be warm, welcome, you know, for a student to learn. So you have to create that environment.
How do you do that, though?
I think it's just hard work and past practice and practice and then practice again.
Go ahead.
I sort of have two things that I wanted to say. I think we have to be careful not to equate mental illness with violence. The MacArthur Foundation had a panel on mental health and violence and found that there's not necessarily a relationship. What has to happen is often there's substance use that is a predictor of it happening. If that happens in conjunction with mental illness, then there's more likely to be a violence. But there's not a direct contact. So I wouldn't want to say that just because someone suffers from mental illness that they necessarily are going to be violent.
Well, there's been more stress, and I'm sure you know this, Ellen, lately on dangerousness or threat assessment. So not necessarily saying, you know, this person has a mental health issue, but what is the state of this person at this moment in time, and do they represent a threat at this moment in time?
Right. And that came out of the same report that was referred to the Secret Service and what was called the Safe Schools Initiative, which was done jointly by the Secret Service and the Department of Education. And they came up with a plan of how to deal with threats where it should be reported to the principal, who can then evaluate the threat and decide whether it's really something substantial or something that's transient, if it's going to really last or should be looked into, and then to decide whether it's serious or not serious, whether it needs to be addressed.
That's tough. It's a lot of judgment calls.
It is. It is.
And you might be right or wrong.
But I agree that you need to have a group of people who are making those decisions. I know that at the University of New Hampshire, as a response to what happened at Virginia Tech, there's now a response team that includes people from different parts of the university, counseling, professors, administrators, a bunch of different kinds of people who might hear about things like this to kind of be there to respond if it happens. And I know that high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools are doing the same kind of thing.
Wow, Deborah Livingston, it's a lot for a school staff to handle in addition to all the other, you know, educational pieces of what they're supposed to do.
It is a lot. Yes.
Do you have the staff to deal with this? I mean, is this a reasonable request to make of our schools?
I think it's a reasonable but necessary request to make of our schools. We're in the business of children. We're around them all the time. And we have to be supportive of in every way we can.
In terms of this idea that Ellen's getting at, that you can't profile people more, it's about threat assessment. What are some of the thoughts that you have concerning that, especially in the Manchester district?
Well, again, I agree with Ellen. It's about looking at that whole child and determining what exactly that child needs at that moment, meet their needs, and you've created a much happier child and a child that, that also can learn, and the children around them can learn as well.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Kevin, I'd like your thoughts on this, too. You know, the idea that you really need to be keeping an eye on this, that it's a team approach, you're assessing threats. But, you know, some schools feel understaffed. Adults in the schools have a lot on their plates. Guidance counselors, I don't even know how many students your typical guidance counselor has before him or her, 100, 200, 300. So it's a lot.
It is, but it's necessary. It's needed. I can tell you, to speak to our school, it's a student population of a little over 300, I believe. We do have a guidance counselor. And what I've noticed about educators in general is they're natural leaders. And they're very protective of students in their class. I've noticed that over and over again, that, you know, they're in charge. And they know the students. And that's half the battle, I think, getting to know what's going on with them in school and outside of school. I mean, we have a very good principal. We have a very good staff in our little school. And the community is a great community. And that's all important. That's all part of it.
All right. We will talk a lot more in just a moment. Your questions, comments, concerns about school security are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Back in a moment.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, growing tensions in Ukraine and the political motivations of Vladimir Putin. Then the increasing reliance on adjunct professors at colleges and universities. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather becoming mostly sunny, windy today, much colder, highs only in the low to mid-30s in the North Country, ranging upper 30s, mid-40s in the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and Dartmouth-Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide, information at d-hdocs.org. And from Revision Energy in Exeter, providing solar energy systems to New Hampshire families and businesses, more online at revisionenergy.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, medical marijuana meets new challenges in New Hampshire. We'll find out more tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, we're talking about school security in the wake of a violent attack at a Pennsylvania high school a week ago, where a student lashed out with a knife, injuring 20 students, 4 seriously. The phone number for you to join us about the school security policies in your district and how you feel about them is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Ellen Cohn, Kevin Hamilton, Deborah Livingston, lots more folks who want to jump in on our conversation. So let's go to Lynn next in Merrimack. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
Forgive me. I'm a little nervous. But my daughter, she's in third grade now, but she was at a different school in second grade. by October of starting school, she was in a deep depression. She has Asperger's and ADHD. She does not have any mental disorder, but she does have anxiety. And, of course, she's socially awkward. So she was treated differently by her peers. She was bullied and also felt that the faculty was not there for her.
I'm sorry to hear about that, Lynn. Yeah, go ahead.
She would come home and she just was crying every day that she got off the bus. She would hate going to school. And she would tell me, "Mommy, I just want to be in the woods like an animal. I don't want to be with other people. I want to die. I want to hurt someone." These kind of things coming from a 7-year-old need to be taken seriously. And
so did you get any sort of, you know, did you talk to the guidance counselors and so forth? Yeah.
Yes, she did get an IEP. And despite the IEP, these feelings of hers continued. And she just felt like no one in the school had her back. She had no one to go to confide in, to cry, no one that would hold her. She'd come home. I would teach her social stories and positive ways to cope and deal with things, but all for naught. So what I managed to do was advocate to get her transferred to a different school. She goes to Master Cola here in Merrimack now that has a program specifically designed for behavioral and emotional problems students.
Well, Lynn, I'm sorry to hear your story, and what a struggle for you. And I'm glad you found something. You know, I'm kind of heartbroken by this story, Ellen Cohn. Nobody in the school, Mommy, has my back.
I think that's really upsetting that there was no one there who could respond to those problems. I think there are other students who feel that way in schools. We talked before about the culture in a school. It's so critical. I've been doing research on predicting why kids break rules or don't break rules. And one of the questions we asked them, which was suggested by one of our teachers, was is there an adult you can talk to about important problems happening? And not to our surprise, to our upset, there were a number of students who felt there were no adults they could talk to. And one of our principals has started a program where the students who really feel that that no one cares about them, he calls his fishes, and tries to set up mentoring relationships between those students and teachers in his school so that there is an adult that they can talk to.
Kevin, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, what's important, what the caller said, is obviously it's sad. You know, the young child had some issues, but what's important of that, and we talked about earlier, there was information that the mom probably had to have a dialogue with somebody within the school. Send the child to Master Cola Middle School. When I was growing up down there, that was what it was called. And they've got a program. So what we're talking about is we've got some issues here. What are we going to do with it? And down in the Merrimack case, like, apparently the school has a program where this child's in now. I hope it works out.
Yeah, well, good luck to you, Lynn. Glad you called in. And here's an email that just came in from Christina. She says, "I find your panelists' assertion that the media to blame is incorrect. I teach elementary age students. They don't watch the news. And yet I have had chairs thrown at me. I've had very young students threaten to bomb our school. There is no one to point the finger at and say that's to blame. But the mental instability of students is very real. Sometimes I think we pretend it's not as big a problem as it is. For parents that do want to get their kids help, the waiting list to see a counselor can be as long as 6 months." Thank you, Christina. Boy, now we're getting outside the school walls, but she's right. And Deborah Livingston, I have also heard that there's a severe shortage of child psychiatrists, in the community. And I'm guessing the guidance counselors within the schools are similarly stretched. Go ahead. Christina, thank you for the comment.
Well, certainly the caller has a point that we do have things happen in classrooms and in schools. And you mentioned it. It's bigger than just the schools, and that is very true. It's about how can we provide services to children in the mental health area? How can we make sure that they have that support so that when they're coming into schools, they're not bringing with them what has happened at home or in the community?
Hard to do.
Yes, it is.
So how do you do that, especially in a cash-strapped district like Manchester? I know you guys have had your financial struggles there.
Well, some of the points that Ellen has made around the relationships and pointing to the that again back to the school climate. Are there people who are continually visible? The principals in Manchester are extremely visible. Teachers and they're out with the kids. They're out
in
the playground.
Yeah.
They are definitely not in their offices, they have really heightened how they look at student behavior and what we can do to provide assistance.
So in addition to being an educator, you now have to sort of be a, I don't want to say a child psychologist, but at least very tuned into those behavior
that
issues.
Is correct.
It was an assistant principal in Pennsylvania who was roaming the halls, as you said, and attacked this kid and helped out.
And
yeah.
I would say the same thing occurred in Walpole, where the principal was right there. So that visibility paid off.
Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, I like to call that in our school with our principal and a vice principal. I call it leadership by walking around the building.
Right.
If they see a door that should be locked, they'll take care of that. They're visible. I come from a law enforcement background, obviously, and I think visibility is deterrent to anything.
Do you want to jump in, Ellen?
I just wanted to say that I think in general, the mental health problem is more general than just the schools. There's a conference every year, the Eric Cogswell Conference in Portsmouth. Last year it was on mental health and criminal justice. And what people said is that New Hampshire in the 80s had a lot of resources in terms of mental health. We really don't have those facilities anymore, not only because some of the facilities closed, but they're just not available. And so it's asking a lot of schools to be taking the place of mental health centers.
Is that what's happening?
I know
schools are having to mop this up?
Well, I know in Portsmouth, at Portsmouth High School, they used to have a program with Seacoast Mental Health called the Clipper Health, where if students had problems, it was right in the high school. But then, because of money, it got discontinued.
All right. Well, let's go back to our listeners. And Tyler's been waiting a long time in Hancock, Vermont. Tyler, you're very patient. Go ahead.
No problem. Thanks for taking my call, because I'm very thankful we're expanding the discussion about school security just beyond metal detectors and those walls. Because with a quarter of Americans seemingly having supposedly anxiety or depression, trying to medicalize this difficulty seems just like a difficult way to control it and react. And I was hoping we could take a larger view and look at kind of these epidemics of violence, domestic violence, the police violence out in Albuquerque. And it seems like for school security advocates, I was wondering what the panelists thought about enlarging this discussion to discuss the cuts of schools. You know, how can a guidance counselor attend to 300 students, honestly? And what about parents that are working 80-hour weeks and can't spend time with their children, so they're babysat by an iPad, you know? So I didn't know about the conversation on school security, enlarging that to creating an American culture that doesn't create kids that are, ignored and bullied for their differences. How can we broaden this discussion to beyond just detecting, but cultivating a youth that don't have these tendencies?
Wow, Tyler, that's a great thought. Thank you so much. Ellen, do you want to jump in there?
Well, I think one reaction to that is that I think that it does go down to what the culture is that we create in the school. And so that's why I think this bystander thing actually works pretty well. It's been used quite a bit with the issue of sexual violence, where instead of blaming victims or blaming perpetrators, the focus is on saying this is all our problem. And so I think the same thing is true of school violence, to make teachers, to make staff, to make students all feel like they're part of the solution. They can solve the problem. They know something. They want to have a better school. They want to make that possible. There was a book written, No One Left to Hate, about Columbine, and by Elliot Aronson. And what he talks about is the culture at Columbine High School, where there were kids who were left out. And so I think that it's really important to create this culture where everybody sees it's their role to do something about it. We can't just leave it to the teachers, because often the students are the ones who know what's going on.
Sure. And although you can create a sterling culture in your school, Deborah Livingston, and you're still having to, I don't want to say work in competition with, but you're still faced with the broader culture where these values that you may try and create in your school are not promulgated, as Tyler says.
You're exactly right. And in that 50,000-foot view of what's happening in our world, We have children who have experienced violence, or perhaps not even a dinner the night before, who have been sitting in an emergency room because a parent or someone in the family has a drug issue or an alcohol issue, and trying when the student comes to school and their children, they're 7 years old, they're 13 years old, they can't leave it at the schoolhouse door. So just looking at that broader issue of how can we really focus on children and what their needs are beyond the school door and in our communities every day.
Well, Tyler, thank you. It's a big point, and I appreciate you raising it. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Richard's calling from Manchester. Hi, Richard. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me, and good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Okay, so I really appreciate everyone getting together and having this discussion because it's very important to a lot of parents out there, and I think a lot of kids in their schools are struggling to kind of adapt to these situations. But one thing, I just wanted to make two points. One is that we see a lot in colleges these days that colleges have an inbuilt counseling center. Now, colleges have budgets to do so, and I think it's a lot easier for them to do it because of endowment funds and donations and things like that. But I think that an in-house counseling center would help greatly in schools in the Manchester district and all around, you know, the country. Because one, I think it's very important that professionals who have studied and who have trained to deal with these problems and how to make this problem into a solution. I think it's very important that those problems or the issues that the students have are dealt with properly.
So you said you had two points, Richard. Go ahead. What's the second one?
And then the second one is just that I think that it all really comes down to, you know, when I was in high school, you know, everyone was looking out for each other. And I think that we take a lot of pride in, or students take a lot of pride in, what their peers think of them. And I think it's very important to cultivate an environment in the school, however that may be, that the peers of the students who are having these mental problems or having these challenges, you know, kind of embrace it and are educated about it. I'm talking about kids in, you know, middle school or high school. And I think that's very important because at the end of the day, these kids just want to live, you know, normally.
Sure.
It's not something that they can control. It's not something that they, you know, have a chance to just go to bed and wake up with not having it.
Right. It's always there. Richard, thank you so much for your thoughts. Did you want to jump in on that, Kevin?
Just well said. I appreciate the call. It was very well said.
Yeah. Ellen?
Well, it just reminds me a little bit of one thing that I think is different. We were talking about that, is that kids who have problems can be attacked not just at school, but all because of social networking, because of the internet.
Cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying.
A lot of shows on that.
So I think we have to at least be aware of that. And I think that puts a lot of strain on schools. How can the schools monitor what's going on when students aren't in school? It used to be kids' bullying has gone on forever, kids being bullied. We talked about that. But the bullying would happen at school, and then that was it. Now it can continue forever. Things can be put on the internet.
Well, one thing I noticed that when I was in school back in the day, if you weren't involved in sports, there really wasn't anything after school. Our little hamlet up there, we had a program called the A-plus program. Now it's the Campton After School program, and a ton of kids participate in that. It's everything from archery to arts and crafts, and there's a meal, I think, or snacks are served, and it's something for them to do.
It's a little more community.
Well, it's the culture and climate that I believe in. And, you know,
and
we are taking steps to, I mean, schools, are they going to be 24/7 at some day? I don't know, but they're certainly being more used now than back when I was there.
Sure, absolutely. After school programs and so forth and so on, and breakfast in the morning and so forth. Go ahead, Deborah.
Schools are no longer 8 to 2. They are no longer. And beyond sports and other activities, for example, at Hillside Middle School, every Wednesday the school is open all evening. I've been over where students were taking a class on everything from dance to first aid, and that community, you could feel the community support when you came in the building. And to have that for children is just that extension of the school and that feeling of constant safety and somebody being there with them.
As that mom said earlier who called, nobody's got my back. The feeling that somebody in that building has your back, a first step. What would you do if you had unlimited resources, Deborah? I'm going to make you queen for a day of the Manchester School District. What would you do to improve school safety if you did have unlimited resources?
Well, I'd start with counseling, psychologists, social workers, all of those folks who can provide one-on-one care to our kids.
Okay. Well, it's been great to talk to all of you. Deborah Livingston, thank you for taking time out for us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
That's Deborah Livingston, superintendent of the Manchester School District, formerly superintendent of Fall Mountain Regional District. Kevin Hamilton, it was good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Kevin Hamilton, retired New Hampshire state captain, member of the Campton School Board's Safety Committee, and Ellen Cohn, thank you, and we'll put some of your research and some of those numbers on our website so folks can check it out. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
That's Ellen Cohn, psychology professor, coordinator of the Justice Studies program at UNH. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our other volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, medical marijuana meets new challenges. Last year, supporters of marijuana use for health purposes cheered when a bill became law. However, they've since been frustrated over the time frame of dispensaries and patient cards, also the lack of a grow-your-own option. But others say patience is needed, that implementation should be done carefully to avoid dangerous mistakes. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Edward Jones, a financial services firm serving individuals and business owners. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, a member of SIPC. And Windows and Doors by Brownell, featuring energy-efficient Marvin products for your replacement or new construction project. Showroom at the Powerhouse Mall, West Lebanon.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Yesterday, the Ukrainian military began using force against pro-Russian militants in the eastern part of the country. The operation, intended to drive separatists from occupied buildings, drew immediate reaction from Russian officials. The Russian Prime Minister